This is the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast from Advanta IRA, where we show you how to explore investments beyond Wall Street and open your eyes to new options for your portfolio. It's time to take control and give yourself the freedom to choose where you invest your money.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Today, we are pleased to welcome on Enmol Singh, who is the author of Prepping for Success and founder of Live Traders. It's going to be an interesting conversation. Now, we, here at the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast do like to bring a variety of different views to the general topic of alternative investments. Now, the investments that we're going to be typically talking about today are going to be in the more traditional category, but we always like to bring viewpoints that might be new, interesting, because not everyone is going to only invest in alternative assets. There is certainly a place and a very good value for investing in stock markets, but the problem with them is that, one, they're very complicated, two, they move very fast, and at the end of the day, we are all emotional creatures, and understanding how to kind of navigate that, be successful, and be able to divorce yourself from the inherent emotion that we all get when we look at our bank accounts is very important. So Enmol is going to be bringing us a good breadth of knowledge and some specific expertise that he has on the topics of this and exactly how to, maybe not necessarily be successful and make the correct trades, but at least set yourself up for success to where you're not always, kind of chasing your tail and getting mad and, kind of falling into that trap that we all do with being emotional about our money. So thank you so much for being on with us today. If you wouldn't mind, give us a little bit of background about yourself. How did you kind of come to be in the position you're in? How did you come to found Live Traders? You're an author as well, which is, impressive in its own right. So I'll kind of give the floor over to you for the first part of it and, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So, I started trading very early on when I was 18 years old. I was really curious about the stock market and I was sitting in my dorm room with a bunch of different friends, and none of us knew anything about the stock market at that time. But I think every guy at some point is, curious about the stock market, right? They want to learn why things move up and down, what's causing this. And we all grew up watching movies that, show a great lifestyle when it comes to the stock market. So that's where the original seeds were planted. And I started researching online and trading on my own. I started writing articles as a freelancer for Yahoo Finance and all those different websites. And, that was my start into this investing space. And then eventually, while I was in my dorm room, I joined a prop firm. For those of you who know prop firms, that's basically a firm that gives you their money to trade. In exchange, they take a percentage of everything that they make. So I learned under the prop firm. I got trained. I traded their money for about 5 years. Worked my way up in that level in that company. And then in 2015, that company got bought out. And then I had an option to whether continue with the new company that's being bought out or start something off my own. And that's when I, got in touch with my business partner now, who's my mentor, who taught me how to trade in the stock market. I got in touch with him and I called him and said, hey, do you want to join the new company? Are you joining the new company that's bought out or should we start something off our own? Because I'm like, we don't need the company's money anymore. So why are we giving them 30% of everything we make? Why don't we just start our own company? And then that's how we started Live Traders in 2015 now. Which is one of the most popular trading education and company out there. We do a lot of seminars, we do webinars, we do online courses and training, as well as in the publishing business with newsletters and different, trade research that we offer. So that's kind of what we do now in terms of the Live Traders part. But in addition to Live Traders, I also have I'm an angel investor. I have 32 different startup companies that I'm a silent investor in, as well as I also do investing in the crypto space, real estate. But it all started from trading. That's how I got the money to in the first place. Then I started getting into all these different avenues. And that's kind of what I do now.
Awesome. So just a little bit of additional background. So when you were trading at the prop firm, what was kind of your area of expertise? Were you commodities, options, straight equity plays? What was kind of like your niche that you carved out when you were doing prop trading?
So it's purely day trading stocks the first hour of the day. So the first hour when things are moving up and down, there's a lot of momentum, news from the prior day. So our strategy that we had typically only worked in the first 2 hours. So I specialized in that, and I wouldn't sit in front of my computer all day long. I just focused on trading from 9 a.m. till 12 p.m., and then I usually don't trade after that. So that was the specialty that I started with. And then eventually, I went into doing swing trading, holding trades for a few days, a few weeks, and to now even doing that in addition to long-term investing.
Okay, great. I'm always curious to know. It's you know, people oftentimes ask me, because I've been in, which is odd to even say now that I'm going on my 13th year of being like just in the alternative asset space. So like, oh, it's got to be so complicated and everything like that. I'm like, I like my job. It's basically just reading a lot of stuff. And you want to talk to the complicated people, talk to the people that sit on a trading desk and carve out different niches and strategies. And if you really want to have your head spin, talk to someone that sits on an options desk. You know, it's, and that's why I like bringing on people, you know, such as yourself to kind of help people, because one of the problems that I see, at least in finance in general, or let's call it investing in general, is that the most accessible investments to people kind of come with this huge amount of complex baggage. You know, on a fundamental level, people understand, hey, you know, I buy a piece of a publicly traded, I buy a piece of a publicly traded company. Oh, that's fantastic. But the complexities that go into our underlying financial markets and systems are just mind-numbingly complex at times. So while yes, it's accessible, there's just so much out there to kind of try to digest and understand. And that all leads into being successful. You know, you have to kind of, you know, everyone wins the lottery. But, you know, rarely do people do it on a daily basis. So understanding what you're doing to be successful is the key in all this. And I think that's probably a good place to start is, you know, figuring out that why of, you know, people in the securities market. And that's what I like to focus on. Granted, I like to opine my position in the alternative space, but, you know, for people that are kind of coming into the more traditional financial markets, you know, what are kind of some of the whys of, you know, why people, you know, would want to do that and kind of building that foundation? Because everyone needs a why.
Yeah. And I think the why is something that is going to be different for everybody. Everybody's going to have different whys. But over the course of years, I've seen a few common whys that come into from this people who join our company or people who take courses from us or seminars from us. And we always ask them, why did you get into this first place? There's so many different ways to make money. I mean, you could get an Airbnb business. Why this one specifically? And I think the biggest reason that people point out, and the biggest reason for me, I mean, for me, it was like I was an introvert, right? So I didn't want to have the office politics and, you know, go to an office and have to work my way up in a company and, you know what I mean? Like all this office politics stuff. And I just didn't want to do that, you know, being an introvert. So for me, it was a very natural transition because growing up, I was on my Xbox all the time. And then all it really did is I substituted the Xbox for a computer, but I'm still on it. So, you know, there hasn't much has changed in that department. So for me, it was that. I was always on my computer growing up, and that's how in 18 years old I discovered the stock market. So that was my why as an introvert. But for a lot of other people that I found, which is the time, right? Because, you know, if you have a job, let's say you're driving to work, right? Then you're at work. Then you're driving back home. Majority of your day is gone. Maybe you'll have an hour or two if you're with your wife or kids, if you're lucky, at the end of the day. So I think that was one of those things with the stock market is that it gave people the time freedom, right? To, hey, you can do it from home. So you can kiss your kids goodbye. That's what my business partner does. He's much older than I am. He's got three kids. So for him, he gets to say goodbye to his children every single day while because he's trading from home. So I think that's the biggest why that people get into it for is to be able to do it from home, to have the time freedom. And if you're traveling, you can still work. Like if I travel all the time, I'll take my little goodie bag, which has got an external monitor, a laptop, you know, all of the stuff that I need. And wherever the Airbnb I'm staying at, that's my office for that day. And I'll still be able to trade that first 2 hours of the day and then continue about my day and enjoy the holidays. So I think that's the biggest whys that people get into it for. And honestly, COVID gave me a great appreciation for this business that I didn't have before. Because for a lot of people, you know, they were thrown off course. Now they have to adapt. They have to, you know, adapt to this environment and learn how to work from home. For me, nothing changed. There was no difference from pre-COVID to after COVID because I was always at home anyway. So I think that gave me a really good appreciation for this business as well. So that was just some of the whys that most people point out.
Yeah, and that's definitely something good to bring up because with any type of investing, you always need to make sure that, you know, people rarely do they value their the time value of money. That's one of the things that I've seen throughout my career is that no one ever you know, they look at cost basis simply by just looking at, oh, what did this cost me financially or X, Y, and Z? And just like you said, you know, we, you know, not everyone, you know, working in the mornings is fantastic, but for the vast majority of the population in the US and the world, you know, we spend, you know, the better part of 10 hours, whether it's traveling to work, at work, from work. And granted, more people are working from home than ever. But, you know, we have precious little of time, and it's the one thing we can't make any more of. So value it. And factoring that into investing, you know, being able to invest and having something that can allow you the ability to do it on a much more flexible schedule from home is incredibly valuable. So making sure you value your time when looking at these strategies, I think is, you know, definitely a great point to bring up. So, you know, covering the whys again, and the context of this being very accessible to people, but again, just because it's accessible doesn't mean it doesn't have a lot of things that kind of go into it. And I think that really factors into kind of figuring out what's the best fit for people. Because at face value, buying stocks is, you know, fundamentally an easy thing to do. Or I should say simple. Being successful at it is not easy. But the simplicity factor is awesome. But, you know, understanding what's right, because not only do you have just, you know, straight equities, you have different strategies associated with that. You have things like options. You have ETFs. You have mutual funds. And they all have their different flavors and fees and returns. So maybe walk us through kind of, you know, when you're educating people, you know, they figured out their why, they figured that the, you know, trading stocks or being invested in the more traditional markets is beneficial to them. What would you kind of say is, you know, how do you kind of, one, let's break it down. One, how do you determine what's right? And, you know, what does that look like from like a sample of a few different avatars maybe?
Yeah. So I always start off people with giving them the worst case scenarios, right? With like preparing them, because I think that's one of the things we're missing in this business and why a lot of people fail in this business is they have unrealistic expectations. And, you know, with the advent of social media and TikTok and all of that, there's so-called, you know, pretend traders turn $500 into $5 million in 29 minutes. It doesn't work, right? So I think people have unrealistic expectations. And we saw that with the whole GME and AMC thing when that happened, right? We saw that the greed came in. People trade very emotionally. So first thing is to realize that, hey, pushing a buy or sell button does not make you a trader. Anybody could do that. My mom could do that. Does that mean she's a trader? No, right? So a trader is just, it's a profession. It's just like any other business. It has a learning curve. You have to learn what you're doing. You need to know what you're doing. And more importantly, whatever you are doing, it cannot be on a whim. It cannot be emotional. You have to have back-tested that strategy. So any strategy that we employ, it's been back-tested for the last 30 years to see how that performs. So we know the ratios for that. We know, okay, that's the win-loss ratio for the strategy. That's the average winner versus average loser. That's the Sharpe ratio. That's the maximum drawdown of the strategies. So all of those things we know to create a profitable strategy, that all we're really doing is executing on a strategy. There's no room for emotions in that. It's very robotic trading. So I think traders do it incorrectly. They trade based on emotions of greed and fear. And that's the number one thing not to do. So when people come to us, we'll usually start them off with, hey, is this even right for you? Because it's not for everybody. And not everybody, you know, I hate saying that, but not everybody can be a successful trader. Because, you know, you have to have the desire, number one. And you have to have that, you know, that objective mindset that is not subjectively trading on emotions, right? And, you know, my ex-girlfriend told me that, like, you know, I'm very unemotional. So it helps me in trading, maybe not in relationships. But when it comes to trading and investing, I'm completely detached to the outcome. And all I'm looking for is this match my strategy. Is this meeting my criteria? Or have I tested this strategy? How did the strategy do the last 50 times if I traded this? And those are the things that I use to make an educated decision. So there's a very fine line between gambling and like intelligent speculation. What we're trying to do is intelligent speculation based on things we've tracked. So that's number one, is to realize that. Number two is to start working on your mindset first. Because, you know, we've seen that anytime the stock market goes down, right, people sell it. People sold the stock market in 2008, 2010. They're losing money. But if they were holding it now, I mean, they're back up. But most people trade on fear and greed and emotions. That is why majority of the people never make it in this business, because, you know, research has already been done. Trading releases the same hormones of dopamine and serotonin, the same ones you get when you're having sex, when you're gambling, when you're doing like cocaine or illicit drugs. And research proves that. And as traders and investors, we're getting that every single day, especially if you're trading millions of dollars every single day. You're getting those spikes on a daily basis. So if you're not emotionally stable and you're letting those hormone spikes control your decisions, it's a recipe for failure. So that's the number one thing. And majority of the people who come to us who end up becoming really good traders are usually ex-pilots, ex-poker players. They've always gone on to make great traders. And the reason that I think why that is because ex-pilots, right? No matter how long they've been a pilot, they could be flying for 30 years like a veteran pilot. Still, every single time they're getting on ready for a new flight, they'll still go through the checklist. Every single time. They're not saying, I'm an expert, I've been flying for 30 years, and I could just go by it, I know what to do. They'll still go through every little thing, check, 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 check. And that's what a good trader does, is goes through the strategy. Does this meet this criteria? Great, let's move on. So I think those are some of the biggest things. And then ex-poker players, because they know when to hold it, know when to fold it, right? It's not like a trade is going down and the stock is going down. And what a lot of people do is they keep holding that stock. Maybe it'll come back up, Alex. Maybe it'll come back up. Let me buy more, right? It's going down. Rather than getting out, taking a loss, because there's also a thing known as opportunity cost. Sure, it might come back up, might take 5 years. Are you going to hold on, waste that capital that's tied up in that position? Or can we deploy that capital to a different position that's going to be more fruitful for us? So I think those things people have to understand. And I think the problem with that is, you know, most people come from a job background. And a job background, what happens? You don't have a concept of risk because it's not your money, right? You're risking the company's money. You can spend whatever you want. And then as a employee, guess what? You have consequences. If you don't do something your manager told you to do, well, you could lose your job. You could get fired. You could get doxxed. In trading, though, nobody's looking after us. We can easily close our laptop. Wife will ask you, how was your trading day? Oh, it was great. She doesn't know how much money you lost. Very easy to just close the laptop. There's no consequence. So all of those things we have to self-create for ourselves, especially when, because trading is an entrepreneurial venture. You're running a business. So how are you going to control yourself?
No, absolutely. And I think those are definitely some good points to jot down a few notes to kind of jump into. But just, you know, talking to a broad audience, you know, you mentioned a few things, you know, people that aren't inherently, you know, in a, you know, finance background. You mentioned things like Sharpe ratio, and, you know, most people aren't necessarily familiar with what a Sharpe ratio is or a beta analysis and things like that. So I just at least give a quick definition of what that is in case people were taking notes.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, you know, what we want to do for every strategy is, A, first thing, I want to know my win-loss ratio, right? What's the win-loss ratio? Just like a batting average for any sport. So let's say my win-loss ratio is 50-50, which means I'll take 100 trades, I'll lose 50 of them, I'll win 50 of them. Now, to most people, they would think, well, Anmol, if you're only winning half of them, losing half, you're basically making nothing. But that's not the case. Because if my winner, average winner, is twice the size of my average loser, then I only need to be right 40% of the time, really, to make money. So I could lose 6 out of 10 trades and still end up being profitable. So it's not about winning a lot. And I think that's the misconception people have. And I mean, you being in the alternative space, you know that, right? You're not going to get home run on every single investment you're going to make. In fact, 80% of the angel investments I make end up going bankrupt, right? But the 20% that end up succeeding or going IPO or going public, that's where I make my money. Same thing with trading. It doesn't have to be that you're going to win 90% of your trades. It's unrealistic. I, right now, for this last 6 months, I've won only 50% of my trades. But each of my winners is twice the size of my losers. That's the win-loss ratio that you use to calculate that, you know, Sharpe ratio. And that's what we're looking at, is that making sure that the odds line up. Just do the math, right? If I take 10 trades, let's say 5 of them I win $100 on, I get $500. And then 5 of them I lose $50 on, right? So I lost $250. Overall, I ended up making $250. So that's what we want to have, is we want to have the ratios and these numbers stacked in our favor, not against us.
Great. So at least just kind of recap. So basically, you know, figuring out, you know, the general why, if someone wants to do this, that's, you know, simple enough, maybe not always easy to be that introspective, you know, to oneself. But it's important, especially when looking at developing an investment strategy, because that's kind of the key here, is that anyone can invest. Anyone can do really anything they want to. It's the beauty of this country. It's the beauty of human life. But not having a strategy is, you know, you're shooting yourself in the foot, is putting it lightly. It's, you know, investing without purpose is gambling. You know, at the end of the day, you're just taking a wild roll of dice. Unless you have kind of a outline, an outlook, a strategy, a budget, you're, you know, again, people hit the lottery. But not everyone does. So that's, again, kind of the keys that I'm getting from you, is, you know, having a real, you know, pragmatic approach to this. Now, in general, at least kind of when you're consulting with people, you know, what buckets would you say that the, you know, the short-term versus the long-term investor fall into? Is it, you know, people that, you know, value their time, you know, which one kind of takes the bigger time commitment? And, you know, which one, you know, which strategy do you see, you know, kind of more of the general population kind of falling into a beneficial adoption of?
So I think a lot of that depends on a few different things. So, you know, obviously your skill level is a big factor because day trading is fast, right? So once we get a lot of older clients, I usually don't recommend day trading for them. I usually recommend swing trading or longer term stuff that you can hold on and you don't have to get in and out all the time. Because sometimes day trading is pretty fast. Like, for example, today I took a few trades. I was in them maybe for a few minutes, some even a few seconds because we're looking for quick moves. So if you're not quick with that, and you're not computer savvy, you're not tech savvy, you don't know how to use keyboards and all of that, then that's a problem. So that's number one thing is your skill level and your speed of implementation and execution. That's number one factor, but also the amount of capital that you're coming to the markets with. Because the bigger the capital, the bigger the time frame you have to take. Because there's also a thing known as liquidity, right? So if you're trading billions of dollars, we can't day trade with that. You can't get in and out with that amount of capital. There's not enough liquidity in the markets. You're going to influence the market. You're going to cause the market to move up or down. So we can't do that. So then you know, okay, we have to take a longer term approach. And that's why majority of the hedge funds do long-term investing. They don't do day trading because they can't. But if somebody has, let's say, $1 million or $100,000 or even $10,000, well, you can day trade because there's enough liquidity for us to get in and out all day long without any influence on the markets. So then we can do short-term trading. And then also, you know, when newer people come in, let's say they only got $20,000, let's just start with. Now, if they're long-term invest with that, it's great, but that's not a career though, right? Even if you get 20%, which is an amazing return, right? You get 20%, but your $10,000 goes to what, $12,000 at the end of the year. So you can't really live off it. You can't pay your bills off it. So you have to day trade. Day trading is, as I say, day trade for income and then swing trade and invest for wealth. So when I invest in a swing trade, I'm not trying to take withdrawals out of that account. I'm just looking to build wealth and keep growing that account over and over. Whereas day trade is like a job. You do this for income every single day. So you have to decide what capital you're working with, how much time do you actually have to give to this craft, and what's your speed of implementation and speed of execution when it comes to that, and also your personality type. And if you're somebody who's jittery, who's a little bit nervous, or, you know, then long-term investing is not going to, you're not going to be able to do it. Because you're going to be looking at the quotes every few minutes. You're like, Tesla, why is it down today? But I'm like, you're a long-term investor. You talked about holding it for 10 years. Why are you looking at the price today? That's a jittery trader. More suited for day trading, for short-term trading. Because then you can get in and out and you're not holding stuff overnight. And somebody who's really patient, just the opposite, right? You don't want to be day trading in and out when you can have the bigger moves. So personality types come into that into play as well.
Yeah. And that kind of brings up an interesting point is that, you know, being very honest with yourself when determining, you know, what kind of trader you want to be is really key in this. Because if you're going to try to be a, you know, very, you know, in and out day trade mentality, but you're, you know, coming in and telling someone like yourself, like, yes, I want to be a long-term investor. Well, you know, that's not, you know, being, you know, inwardly honest with yourself about what really is going to set you up for success. And it kind of leads me into this question that I have for you is that what would you say is kind of the biggest hurdle that people have to overcome? You know, let's say, you know, they've already gotten through, they figured out their why, they figured out that, you know, this is something that they want to pursue. So they have the desire, they have the time commitment, they have the capital. What's kind of the biggest hurdle that, you know, let's say they sit down, okay, now what? What's kind of the biggest hurdle that one is the barrier to entry, and two, maybe some stumbling blocks that that people hit? You know, is it that not being inwardly honest enough by saying, hey, look, I wanted to come out and say, yeah, I'm, you know, very stoic. I got, you know, very long-term vision. And then you get in and it's like, you know, you have a 1% price fluctuation on your portfolio and they might as well have set their house on fire. You know, like what's kind of the swing with that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think the difference maker really comes down to right in here, right? A lot of trading is very mental. And I always talk about this, like trading was the biggest personal development journey that I've ever embarked on, you know, because I had to learn so much about myself. Because we're talking about those hormone spikes, right? Now, if you're not an emotionally stable person, you're going to trade on emotion. Basically, you're going to end up gambling, right? Stuff that you should be getting out on, you'll keep holding, maybe it'll come back up. Or stuff that's going up, you never sell because maybe it'll go higher. So you never actually sell something, you just left holding what is known as the bag. You just have to hold in the bag. You never get out of a position. So a lot of trading is very mental. And I think that's the biggest difference maker between people who make it or not. And as we were talking earlier, you have to be very objective and unemotional. And I think going back to the point, because, you know, growing up, our parents are telling us what to do. Then we go to school, our teachers are telling us what to do. Then we go to college, our professors are telling us what to do. Then we go get a job, our boss is telling us what to do. In trading, nobody is telling you what to do. So you have to self-regulate. You have to self-control. And that is the reason why most people fail. Because, again, you're by yourself in your computer. You can do all sorts of stupid stuff. You can ignore all the rules we've talked about. You can ignore everything I've ever taught you. And you can still do it because I'm not there physically to hold your hand. And you don't have a consequence because nobody's going to fire you. Nobody, you're your own boss. And I think a lot of people don't have that self-accountability. And that same thing applies for entrepreneurship too. You're starting your own business. Nobody's going to tell you, hey, you need to do this or this or this. You need to tell yourself what to do. So that's number one difference maker, because a lot of people don't have a consequence system. They don't have a support group. Like I have a trading buddies. We bounce ideas off each other. We hold each other accountable. We share each other's results with each other. And we take a look and review each other's trades, what we could have done better. A lot of people don't have that support group, number one. And then number two, nobody's looking after them. So I think those are the biggest reasons that people fail. They get in their own way. Rather than trading based on a model, a system, we back test it. Instead, they try to trade emotionally. And, you know, I think that's because people grow up watching movies like, you know, Wall Street and stuff like that. They think trading's got to be this exciting life that I'm partying all the time. You know, I'm on boats all the time. Good trading is literally me and my spreadsheet, literally all day long. Looking at my spreadsheet, looking at these models, what's the ratio for this? And removing my own self, even though I think, let's say Tesla's going to go to $1,000. Well, doesn't mean I'm going to put my money in it if the chart doesn't meet my criteria, if the patterns don't meet my criteria. So good trader is very systematic, just looking at models and executing on it. And half the battle of trading is waiting.
Yeah, you want to find a group of really good traders. Don't go to the flashy bar. Go to the place where they're playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, it's true.
I speak from experience. I like D&D. I'm just getting a new one set up. So,
hooray. Oh, I should introduce you to one of my friends. He's a huge D&D player. He's got a store in Texas as well.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, next time I'm on, I always like going to any of the board game shops and checking them out. But we're about to get another campaign started, and I am super excited. But kind of back to the few questions that I wanted to kind of flay out there are, you know, having the understanding of, you know, stumbling blocks are going to happen. It was the point on the accountability group. Yesterday, I did a great interview with a woman named Kim Daly. She's big in the franchise development and franchise consulting world. And one of the biggest points that she brought up too, to echo that point, is having a system of accountability, because very few people, you know, we talk about the kind of mindset, and I'd like to get more into mindset with you in a moment, but you have to be very self-aware, self-honest with yourself when it comes to this. You have to be able to criticize yourself, take it in and improve. And that's a very small portion of the population. A lot of people need a little bit of, you know, support. And granted, coming to someone like yourself with live traders, you know, having a system in place, but that's not the only system you need. Having a peer network is very important. And having some type of accountability group is great as well. And that's not rocket science. I mean, think about, you know, having a workout buddy. Or, you know, someone that keeps you accountable at work. You know, you have work meetings, you have group meetings. You know, someone besides yourself that you have to answer to, because the person that lies the most is yourself to yourself. You can be the most honest person out there, but I guarantee you, even the most honest person in the world routinely lies to themselves or doesn't give a full truth and take full accountability. But if you have that person on the phone, you know, that calls you something, hey, you know, I'm heading to the gym in 10 minutes. Oh, well, I'm too busy. It's like, no, you're not. You just sent me 4 memes on Instagram. You know, you have to have that accountability group. And, you know, whatever that means to you, to anyone, any age range, having that peer accountability is incredibly important. Granted, doing it in a trading circle, you might have to, you know, be a little bit more remote with how you meet people, because, you know, you're not going and lifting weights with them. You're not, you know, making sure they're eating right. But I think the point I'm trying to get across is pretty universal. Having a good support group to keep yourself accountable if you can't realistically do it internally, even if you can, there's no harm in having an additional step of accountability, because you have one more thing to answer to, one more stop loss built into everything. So I do like that accountability aspect of it.
Yeah. I think you have to be honest with yourself to add to your point, because, you know, I'll give you my own example. Like I wasn't, you know, working out for like a long time. And I was lying to myself. I was like, you know, I'm going to start on Monday, and then Monday comes, it's the end of the month. We'll start from next month. And I'm like, well, it's December. We'll just start from next year. And I did that, and I caught myself in that lie. I was like, okay, here's what I'm doing. Now, I could either try to fix it, or I could say, you know what, let me just put things in place to ensure I get that done. So for me, that now means like I got a trainer. He comes the same time every single day. It's forced accountability. There's a gym right here where I live. He comes to my house. He's here now. I have to work out. I can't tell him to go back. So I think that's how I put that in place. So there's no shame in, you know, seeking help or saying, okay, let me put things in place rather than, you know, saying, well, I'm not going to get it done. A lot of people, you know, beat themselves up for it. I can't do it. Just hire or force the accountability, be it a friend, be it a buddy, be hiring a coach. And that's where surrounds, you know, Napoleon Hill talks about in his book, your mastermind group. You need that. You need people around you that are pushing you to get better and being honest with you. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, and it just needs to be, you know, like-minded people that all kind of want the same thing to happen. And it doesn't have to be anything, you know, like we talked about, you know, the advent of social media, you see so much of this flashy thing in trading, and it's really not like that. It also doesn't have to be like what you see, you know, promoted on Instagram with people running across stage and clapping and these huge things. Just a group of like-minded people that all want the same thing. If that's being successful in finance, find some people at the same that have kind of the same franchise in life, that kind of want the same thing, that are doing the same thing. And, you know, I guarantee you it's not going to hurt. You know, if anything, it'll help you. Worst comes to worst, it's a net neutral. So, you know, what's the harm? You know, try anything once. If it doesn't work for you, hey. But, you know, kind of to branch off from that, that kind of goes into reinforcing mindset. And, you know, developing that mindset is something a lot of people have to do. You know, again, there's not a whole lot of airline pilots out there. There's not a whole lot of people that, you know, are professional poker players, at least that, you know, are successful at it enough to be successful in trading. So, you know, when it comes to helping your clients and, again, you know, people that you see who want to get into trading, develop that mindset, what are some kind of key tools, you know, besides maybe a support group that really help to develop the mindset to be successful in this?
Yeah, so I'm a huge proponent of mindset. You know, I am often jokingly people call me, like, if you watch the show Billions, I'm like kind of like the male version of Wendy Rose. You know, so a lot of hedge fund managers or something, you know, I'd have conversations with them or consulting calls, or they're hiring me to just coach them on not messing up all the time. And that's majority of my job these days, is just going and talking to people about their psychology, because that is why majority of people don't make it. And I think some of the things you have to do is, you know, one of the things I talk about in my book, Prepping for Success, is being a person of integrity. Do what you said you're going to do, and do it when you said you're going to do it, period. No ifs and buts. Do what you said you're going to do and complete it when you said you're going to do it. And, you know, oftentimes people will come to me and say, you know, but Anmol, I'm a person of integrity. And, you know, I do what I said I'm going to do. I'm like, really? When's the last time somebody called you and you said, you know what, I'm just busy in the middle of something, let me call you back? And you never did. You ran into an old friend at the airport or a shopping mall. You're like, hey, buddy, good to see you. We should totally catch up. And then you make no attempts to ever follow up with them or ever catch up with them. So you just said things for the sake of saying it. Why? So you got to ask yourself the question, to try to look good, to try to sound good, but you didn't really mean it. And that affects all areas of your life. That comes into your trading or investing too, because you said you're going to do something, then you don't. You said you're going to sell the stock if it goes below this level, you didn't. You're going to sell the stock when it hits your target, you didn't. So that's a lack of integrity. And, you know, how you, other areas of your life are, you know, being playing out in this as well, it also affects your trading. So that's number one thing I start off with, is integrity, and then putting accountability systems in place. So I'll give you an example. This was a, you know, student of mine. He runs a successful hedge fund now, and he was having a lot of issues. Like, this guy was like devout Catholic, very religious person, right? And I have respect for everybody's belief, but I couldn't find, you know, a way to keep him accountable. And I really thought about it. And then I came up with one thing. I'm like, all right, he always talks about his, all his posts online are about religion and, you know, all of the conservatism. And I was like, oh, great. Next time you break your trading plan that you've written, it should be black or white, number one. Once you break that trading plan, you're going to donate $1,000 to Planned Parenthood. he never did it. Because for him, his belief was way more important than money, right? He was way more important. That religious belief was way more important. And guess what? He stayed disciplined. He's like, I'm not going to donate money to them. I'm not going to donate money to them. And that kept him consistent. So that's what I try to do with people, is I try to find how I can keep them accountable, right? What can we enforce? We have to have a consequence system. We have to. You have it in every job. You have it in every CEO is held accountable by shareholders. Elon Musk is held accountable by shareholders. And you think you're going to make it in this business and run a hedge fund without being accountable to anybody? It's just not how it works. So I think those are the things we set up, is integrity, accountability. How do we enforce that? How do we create a consequence system behind that? And those are some of the basics we start off with. And for majority of people, that is usually a good enough thing. And then reviewing it, right? Tracking your trades. I know a lot of people that make good money, but they don't have any log of their trade. They don't maintain any tracking sheets. how do you run a business without collecting the receipts? You can't. So with trading, we have to track every single trade, what time we got in, what time we got out, what was the pattern, what was the strategy, what was the win-loss ratio on this one, what is the average winner versus average loser, did we follow our trading plan, was this trade in alignment with the market trends? Like all of these things we have to track, because that's how we build a system, that's how we build a model, that's how we don't trade on emotion. So I think those are some of the things to address your point.
And what I'm kind of getting from what you're saying here is that, almost treating it like a business, having yourself be the accountable, director of this business. Granted, you are judge, jury, and executioner in this scenario, but at least having the mindset, treat it and have the mindset like it is a business. It's not just, a hobby or something. And granted, this can be a hobby, but if you want to be successful in it, it's really what you want to utilize to. And I'd imagine most of your, clients are people that are either looking to, supplant a good portion of their income or have this be more of a, an actual, use the air quotes, job, to really kind of be what actually financially supports themselves. Treat it like what it is. You make money from your business. You're making money here. Treat it like a business. And I think when people can divorce themselves from it just being me, it's something I'm doing, it's a hobby. If you want to treat something serious, few things are more serious in your life. You have your kids, if you're religious, your religion, and your job are probably some of the, three most, and spouse, would be the kind of the four core tenets of the things that are most important to you. So treat it like a business, bring it up to that level of importance that you put everything else at, and not just something that is a flash in the pan or something that you're going to give up, that, bike that you bought that you rode for 2 months. Just treat it like what it is and place the importance on it personally. And, again, I think that would probably, correct me if I'm wrong, would probably lead to more successes than failures.
Yeah. Cause I mean, it is a business, right? Like we are in a business, and that's the first thing I tell people is like, don't think about it like my name is Anmol and I'm a trader. No, you're running Anmol Trading LLC. That's a business. It's a company. Now in that company, what's your business plan, right? So if you have a business with a business plan, you have to have a trading plan, investment plan. What is your plan? And the plan needs to know when you're going to get in, when you're going to get out if you're wrong, when you're going to get out if you're right, right? What is the business plan based on? What are the models? And then also tracking, as we talked about, keeping a track of sales. I mean, again, some of my family members, they own like these 7-Elevens, stereotypical Indian, right? We got a lot of 7-Elevens, but they keep a track of every little thing. That if we place this drink over here, it sells this much. If we place this on the top shelf, it sells this much. So if those businesses are doing, how do you expect to make it in this business without any tracking? So I think those are some of the elements that you need to have, is just treating it like any other business, and like how businesses report their earnings quarterly, public companies report earnings quarterly. You should be also looking at your results quarterly and evaluating it. How did my plan perform? Rather than looking at it 2 years from now and looking back at your investments or trading, look at it every quarter. How are they doing? Am I all right on track? Am I not? Do I need to pivot? Do I need to change something? And report earnings to yourself like you had shareholders, even if you don't, right? Most of us don't. I don't. But I still treat it like a business. I'll still create these reports for myself, almost like I'm running a hedge fund. So I think I don't treat it any differently. I take it very seriously. And I think that's one of the things people need to realize. This isn't a hobby. I mean, it's a very expensive hobby. If so, it's a business. So learn to treat it like that.
Absolutely. And, again, I think that's kind of a good model that people can wrap their heads around, because, especially when you get into the granular level of saying, hey, here's a trading strategy. Am I going to do swing trading long term? What are my stop losses that I'm building in? When you start throwing all this stuff in, it can get a little overwhelming, but like with anything, if it's something worth it to you in life, you'll make it worth it to you in the present. So again, I think that's, while it may be more complicated, might honestly be kind of the easier thing for people to wrap their heads around, because changing the personal mindset, I think, is probably the harder of the things to do in adopting that viewpoint of saying, okay, like, I have the tools, I can build the cabin, but you're looking through your own eyes. It's hard to look at the back. You can't look at the back of your head when it comes to this. And one of the points that you sent over in your one sheet, I thought was kind of interesting. And since we're getting towards the back end of this, I think it's, if it is a little bit of a departure, I think it's a good time to talk about it. You have a bullet point that says, stop following your passion, which I found kind of interesting. So, as far as the, umbrella of what you do and kind of the strategies and philosophies you have for your clients and investing in general, I thought it was kind of an interesting point. So maybe elaborate on that.
Yeah, definitely. I came up with that point because, you know, when I was getting into this whole trading and business space, I paid a lot of money, right, to have conversations with billionaires and hedge fund managers, you know, whether I need to donate to the charity just so I can have lunch with them. I did all of that. And I talked to the most successful people on, you know, all out there. And the advice that they would always give me is like, follow your passion, which to me, it was kind of like, okay, great. But like, I would love to get some actionable ideas on what I'm going to do. And I think that's because that's a safe thing for them to say. So that's why I tell people, don't look for advice from these top billionaires. Just look for somebody who's just a little bit ahead of you. Let him get you there. And then you seek somebody who's a little bit ahead of you. Let him get you there, right? Rather than looking at this person who's already there, like Elon Musk level, because that's the advice you're going to get is follow your passion. But that's not going to help anybody. Great. What do I do with that? And I think the reason behind why I say that is because let's say I'm passionate about basketball, right? But that's not a career for me. I'm not going to get good at it even if I start playing today. I'm not even built out for that, right? So I could be passionate about it, but that doesn't mean it's going to translate into a successful career, right? Successful careers translate based on your skills. So first, develop your skills, get really good at it, because guess what's going to happen by the byproduct of that? Once you get really good at something, you'll automatically get passionate about it. So get good at something, passion will follow as you get good at something. I don't know anybody who's good at something, really good at something, and they're not passionate. Because if you're really good at something, you'll be passionate about it. So passion on its own is not reliable. First build a skill, first get good at it. Passion will automatically get injected into that. And I think that's how I want you to, people to look at it is build a skill set. Because you could be passionate about whatever you want. It doesn't matter. It's not going to translate into a career if you're not good at it. So I think that's why I, you know, following the passion advice has kept a lot of people broke. You know, they're just stuck in with this. I'm really passionate about this. I'm like, but this business model will never work. Right? Like a lot of entrepreneurs I've invested in angel investments in companies, and it's been like 10 years they've been running that company. Clearly it's not working, but they're so invested in that because they're so passionate. I spent so much time building this company, all of this. I'm like, but A, you're not able to attract any more capital. There's no revenue. We've tried this for 10 years. They've got to pivot at some point. Got to pivot. Passion is not going to pay the bills. So I think that's what I was trying to get across with that point.
No, I think that's really great. And you brought up something, and you may or may not, I really, really kind of resonate with it, is that so much is, you know, especially, you know, we're both younger, I don't exactly know your age, but, you know, being, you know, 35 and, you know, kind of coming of age during the, you know, revolution of social media, is that so many people, especially younger people, you know, born after 2000s or even that's 2024 now. We have 14-year-olds that were born after the 2010, which is frightening. But you know, you get this big imposter syndrome of seeing the people at the top of the hill, or at least a lot of people on social media remember pretending they're at the top of the hill. And we've kind of developed into the society where it's always looking up at the top of the mountain, but not looking at the next step in front of you. You know, you don't win a marathon by, you know, crossing the finish line. You start with the first step. It's one step after another. And the point that you made, which I really want to kind of, you know, bring up is that, you know, don't necessarily look to that billion-dollar hedge fund manager. If you're doing something, look at the person that's doing maybe just a little bit better than you or has a little bit more success, because those are the people that have taken those one or two steps you need to be that successful. You talk about, you know, you at the beginning of that marathon, you don't talk to the person that's run 30 of them if you've never, or maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. The point is that, you know, whatever you're doing in life, the person that's just a little bit more successful than you is a good person to talk to, because those two steps you need to take, they probably just did them. And then once you get there, find the next person, or maybe they've done those steps. You know, kind of keep it within the realm of possibility of people that are doing things similar at a similar level and continually trying to improve will pay dividends. And, you know, honestly, I don't think I've ever really thought about it to that context. So I always like to learn something or take something new from any of my guests. So thank you for that one. I think that's kind of a really powerful point to make is, you know, looking at that person that's taken the two steps you need, figuring out what they did, taking those steps, rinse, wash, repeat, and then you'll get to the top of the mountain.
Right. Yeah. Like not trying to just take the elevator and go straight to the top. You know, just keep working your way up, slow and steady. You know, it's not get rich quick. It's get rich for sure, or whatever your goal is. But like working your way up, stair step your way. There's no like quick one way. And that's the thing, you know, because a lot of the advice that I got from a lot of these really successful people was like about, you know, building teams and all of that. I'm like, but I'm a solopreneur just starting out. Like all of that's not applicable to me right now. I just need somebody to tell me what's the next step. And I think that's what, because the really successful people, they've gotten there. They got teams of people doing the stuff. But as a person starting out, you got to do that stuff that their team is handling. So I would rather speak to their team rather than the actual person who's running the firm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point to make. And, you know, with that, you know, we're kind of coming up on the end of our, you know, time. You know, we like to package these about 45 minutes. So if there's any kind of closing thoughts or something that we maybe didn't cover, let's make sure we hammer on that right now. And then once we're done with that, make sure we let everyone know how to find you. You know, if you have anything else going on, we always want to make sure we highlight our guests and people want to reach out how they can do that. So any final closing thoughts or points that you'd like to make or that we didn't cover in this podcast?
Yeah, so I think, you know, today we covered a lot of different things on, you know, markets, accountability, consequence systems, integrity. So I think the listeners should kind of take all of this we've talked about and just think about, okay, where in my life do I lack integrity? Where in my life do I say I'm going to do something and I don't follow through on? Right? Write those things down. Right? So now you got that, things to work at. And then the other things we talked about, if I don't get that, is there a consequence in place? Is that accountability? So basically what I'm trying to say is take action on what we've talked about today, because a lot of people get stuck in that learning loop. They'll go from one podcast to another podcast, one course to another course, one YouTube video to another YouTube video. Hey, I've read 20 books. I'm like, but your life doesn't demonstrate that you read 20 books because there's no evidence of you applying that material. So rather than just jumping in and getting stuck in that learning loop, going from one book to another book, let's just take action. So we touched upon really good points today. Integrity, we touched upon taking action, consequences and accountability. Let's put that in place. So that would be only advice to your listeners is just don't move on to the like next video or next podcast. Take action on this. Really apply it, because that's the proof in the pudding. That's where the life actually changes, when you apply stuff rather than just hoarding information. You got to actually apply that information. So that's kind of what I would leave the audience with. And the best way to find out for me, you know, lifetraders.com, if you're interested in actually getting into the stock market, either learning as a career or doing it part-time. And then my book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Audible. The audiobook version just came out. It's on iTunes as well. So that's called Prepping for Success, 10 Keys for Making It in Life. Just to preface, that book has nothing to do with trading or investing. It's all mindset. It's all psychology. It's all the things that I've learned in my journey and what I've coached and trained other hedge fund managers and traders with. And that's kind of what's in there. It doesn't mention trading, investing. It's all pure psychology based. And if they want to get in touch with me, Instagram and Twitter is where I'm the most active. My username on both of those is Delta90, DeltaNinety. Don't ask me why. Got a long time ago. So just kept it like that.
Fantastic. Yeah, don't get stuck in the analysis paralysis, people. Take some action, and you'll learn far more from taking that first step than, you know, reading 40 books and never taking that first step. So, Edmil, I really want to appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I say this a lot, but the most precious resource we all have is our time. It's one thing we can't make more of, and you can't buy it no matter how much money you have. So thank you very much for taking an hour out of your day to talk to our audience. Again, thank you everyone for tuning in and joining. My name is Alex Perney. As always, this is the Alternative Investing Advantage Podcast, and have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alternative Investing Advantage Podcast. Tune in next week for more investing tips and strategies.
Want to hear more episodes of The Alternative Investing Advantage? Search podcast at AdvantaIRA.com and subscribe.